hello, everybody, and welcome. Happy Friday, guys. We're going to be going into our 4th of July weekend after this show today. Taylor and I are here in studio.
Well, hello. Happy Friday.
Hi, guys. While we're here doing the show today, actually, everybody at PragerU, all of our staff members here in the LA office are right over on the other end of this wall having a massive party, playing cornhole, drinking root beer, and eating barbecue. So,
and we're hanging out with you, which is way better.
Yeah, this is what we do for you guys.
But I have my patriotic background, and Amala doesn't because she hates America.
I'm wearing blue. The chair is white. The only thing I'm missing is something red, so we're going to have to deal with that today. Oh, look at that. Boom, an American flag. God bless America. I'm going to set that right here for the remainder of the show. Wow. Let's continue. Today, as we do on most Fridays, is going to be a week in review where we go through some of the interesting stories, new stuff that we've been listening to this week. Of course, you guys haven't been able to run away from the Roe v. Wade discussions, which we thought was going to be the case. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Some of the hate being thrown towards a Mr. Clarence Thomas, because he happens to be a black man who goes against the grain of what he is supposed to believe. And you know the left doesn't like that. We're going to be talking about Elmo telling your children to get vaccinated, and what are the implications of that? Jordan Peterson being suspended off of Twitter. A Toronto police report that labels a man as a woman. And CNN talking about the liberal world order when it comes to you having expensive gas at the gas pump. So let's start off with one Mr. Elmo. It's no longer Tickle Me Elmo, it's Vaccinate Me Elmo. And Sesame Street has come out with a little segment where Elmo talks about getting vaccinated and vaccine hesitancy. And we're going to watch and react to that. It's really interesting because when I was a child, of course, I watched things like Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers, Cartoon Network, Disney Channel, all that fun stuff. And I was very unaware of there being propaganda when I was a child. And I don't imagine there was much whatsoever. And now to grow up in an age where we're watching kids programming and kids entertainment and seeing just what is blatant indoctrination and propaganda should be really, really concerning. Something that we should all have keep an eye out for and mark as a red flag, especially if you're parents. I can't imagine you'd be worried about this if you weren't a parent. But I am, and I'm not a parent, watching this and seeing how much political messaging and outright propaganda is in children's programming is really concerning because they're trying to get the youngest and most vulnerable of our population to submit themselves to this sort of ideology. So let's watch this Sesame Street clip and see what we have to say about it. Here we go.
Now Daddy has super duper bandages just like Elmo.
You were super duper today, getting your COVID vaccine, Elmo.
Yeah. There was a little pinch, but it was okay. Elmo was really glad to have Daddy and Baby David there with him. Baby David, where are you?
I had a lot of questions about Elmo getting the COVID vaccine. Was it safe? Was it the right decision? I talked to our pediatrician so I could make the right choice. I learned that Elmo getting vaccinated is the best way to keep himself, our friends, neighbors, and everyone else.
Where did you learn that? Who told you that? Probably the CDC, who has, even without very much evidence, just pushed forward this narrative that children ages as young as like 5 years old need to be vaccinated with the COVID vaccine. I believe they even have some guidance for under 5 years old, which blows my mind. Is that really the safest thing? These are questions that we should be asking ourselves. Is maybe natural immunity safer, or at least waiting until you have concrete evidence of vaccines being helpful for children in this case? Maybe we should wait for that before we say it's the safest way. And when I watch this, it's just wild. You know, Sesame Street should be relied on to teach you things about family, friendships, how to deal with arguments when you're a five-year-old and you're having an argument with somebody else in kindergarten. Maybe how to count. Maybe the alphabet. Maybe your different colors. That's what we rely on Sesame Street for, and actually very little reliance. Your parents should be doing that, but this is like a supplementary material for parents to give to their kids to watch, and hopefully they'll learn some lessons while being entertained with it. But instead, now Sesame Street is telling you that you need to vaccinate your kids, and you have to wonder who's paying for this. It's not like the writers at Sesame Street said, you know, it's so important that we do something on vaccinations right now today. We need to put this out as our next episode. No, somebody paid for this. And it's probably a government agency, which means your tax dollars, or it's Big Pharma, which is even more insidious, that they would be pushing this sort of propaganda onto children.
I prefer the Pfizer jab myself.
Oh, no.
In fact, this segment is sponsored by them.
Yeah.
Kids.
I got AstraZeneca. I got Moderna. I just cannot believe it. And I really thought we were sort of out of the major wave of hearing about COVID anymore, especially with young children, because we know what the stats look like with young kids. We know that they're getting COVID. They're dealing with a few symptoms maybe, or no symptoms at all. And then they are, you know, moving on with their lives. They're not dying from this disease by and large. And we know it's not affecting them in the way that it would affect somebody who is a grown adult or a senior with several comorbidities. That's one of the worst populations you can be in when it comes to COVID, not a young child sitting in front of the TV watching Sesame Street. So why is this the case? And I go out on a limb here and say maybe it's money. Maybe there's a whole nother market for vaccinations and Big Pharma funds if they get children to do this. Even though you can hear in the news, you can read the stats on this, you can read the studies and see that children are surviving COVID-19. They're getting it, maybe getting sick, maybe not, and then they're moving on. So Big Pharma, and I bet all these executives are sitting down just, you know, rubbing their hands together going, oh, what if we push it to kids? Not only just one singular shot, but let's make them plural. Let's do boosters and boosters and boosters, and we'll push this out. And there's a doctor by the name of Marty Mercari, and we've had him, I've interviewed him before here at PragerU, who's spoken out against this in the fact that we have people who do not have your best interests at heart pushing this forward simply for the sake of money. They just want your money.
Yeah, and they're preying upon fears of parents and parents' concern for their children. And, you know, all of the mainstream, elite establishment channels that they control, they're pumping out the same information. And, you know, I'm surprised Elmo's not sitting there saying, if your mom's an anti-vaxxer, make sure you report her to the Disinformation Governments Bureau, kids, because that's about where we are. And,
really?
You know, a parent who's just not well informed is just not going to know any better and take this as gospel when you look an inch below the surface at the data around whether children are really at risk, at some of the side effects, and just the money behind it. It's pretty nefarious, and you can't just trust Sesame Street anymore, sadly.
No, you can't. It's so wild. I mean, I never advocated for parents simply plopping their kids in front of the TV and letting them watch whatever they want to watch, but there used to be a time where you could do that and you'd be generally safe, knowing that your kids were going to get, if not pro-American messaging, just regular, everyday, average human being messaging about little things that kids worry about and that kids need to learn about and that are foundational to their formative years and them growing. But now it's like you sit in front and it's a sponsored by Pfizer monologue about how you need this vaccine and this vaccine and this vaccine. I doubt they're going to do an episode on Elmo getting myocarditis, but that's something that you could be dealing with after this.
If you collapse on the soccer field, just you'll get up eventually. It'll
right.
be fine.
She's like, Elmo's heart feels so much bigger, Dad. No, that's just inflammation. That's inflammation, Elmo.
Honest Sesame Street. That would be a fun satire to make.
That would be a fun satire to make. If only we had the resources to do so in this little studio, we would be right on it. Somebody send me an Elmo puppet and I will make it in response to this because I'm over it. Let's keep watching. There is more to this clip.
Healthy and enjoying the things they love.
Oh, Daddy. Oh, Elmo and baby David have a question. Ooh. Can we have a hug?
Oh, come here, son.
Elmo loves you, Daddy.
I love you, too.
It's okay to have questions about COVID
more.
Vaccines for your kids. Get the latest facts by speaking to your pediatrician or healthcare provider.
Yeah, it's okay to have questions. Go get the latest vaccination.
It's okay to have questions as long as you do exactly what we tell you to do.
Right. And as much as this is like funny, huh? It's not funny, haha. It's funny, weird that this is happening and that we are seeing this in our children's programming. And it's just sad, you know, that people care far more about profit and far more about getting money from unknowing parents who are seeing this and going, oh, well, this must be the right thing to do for my child because I'm seeing it on a show that is known for just doing what is good for kids. Sesame Street has that reputation of if you want a safe place to sit your kids in front of the TV and let them watch and learn, Sesame Street was the way to go. And they would confront a lot of different issues that were really important to young children. Bullying, racism, bigotry, things that, you know, we look at now and we hear those words and we go, red flag. That sounds way too progressive. It sounds like radical leftism. But Sesame Street was actually approaching those topics in a way that was healthy for children and having those conversations and discussions. Now to add this into that discussion completely delegitimizes everything that they've been doing for so long.
Yeah, and we've seen this tactic before, that they'll use what was things that were once trusted in the culture by everybody. You see it in the mainstream media, companies like Disney. They have this veneer of, oh yeah, we're just that brand that you know and love, CBS, just like the good old days when right. you could trust us and Walter Cronkite and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's like media is just the same, and then they infuse all of their far left propaganda and ideology into everything. Disney's doing that now too. You reacted to that video of the Betamax clip that they're putting a trans flag into kids' mm-hmm. content now, and it's like they're just using the stuff that had built up cultural trust mm-hmm. over time and just slapping that over their radical agenda.
Yeah, and it's everywhere, man. I remember when COVID-19 first got announced and everything, and we went through all of this stuff, and all these celebrities started coming out and talking about, oh, it's so important to social distance and stay 6 feet apart, and it's so important to wear your mask. Look at me, I'm Lady Gaga, I'm wearing my mask. And they put all together all these compilations of people doing it, and then the vaccines get ushered out, and the same thing, we hire these celebrities, these common household names and faces to spew to you utter propaganda for young people and Gen Z. Olivia Rodrigo got invited over to the White House to tell people to get vaccinated. And she's a young pop star who probably knows very little about the inner workings of what was happening here and all the different political pawns that they're using to get this message forward. And Sesame Street is just another one tacked onto that list. There's probably thousands and thousands of other entities that they're using to get this message out to people. But something is extra sinister about using Sesame Street, because you know parents aren't watching this. This is literally just a kid, maybe a few parents are, you know, watching over their kid's shoulder, but your kid's sitting in front of the TV just listening to Elmo talk about he needs to get a needle, he needs to get a jab. And that kid goes, well, hey mom, I didn't end up getting vaccinated, and Elmo's telling me that's the right thing to do, and Elmo's telling me that that's a sign that your parents love you, and that's a sign that your parents are keeping you safe. Why did that not happen for me? Why have you not done that? It's just insane to me. And of course, we've seen people on the right end of things, and just logical people who just don't agree with propaganda for children, coming out against this, most notably Ted Cruz, and getting bullied for talking about these things. Ted Cruz came after Big Bird and Elmo, which is a little bit funny. You know, you're picking fights with puppets. But that is the cruel part of this. They will package up their propaganda in these most beautiful, unassuming, innocent little characters, like your pop stars like Olivia Rodrigo and your puppets like Elmo. And then when you know, have a bone to pick with them and you come out and say, well, this is disgusting and I don't support it, they go, well, how could you be mad at Elmo? It's Elmo. How crazy you are to be a grown man talking about a puppet getting vaccinated. That's insane. And they make you look crazy. When it's not crazy at all to go, hey, I would love if my kid had television programming that did not indoctrinate them. And it's a perfect sort of segue and plug for what we do here at PragerU. We have PragerU Kids, because all these parents were coming to us and saying, you know, I try to let my kid watch a little bit of television every now and then, and this is what I'm getting. Messaging about how men can have periods and how they should be vaccinated and how it's totally okay to be confused about your gender and how black people are oppressed and white people are constantly committing acts of microaggression against them. This is what your kids are seeing from Sesame Street, from Disney, from Netflix now, which we might get to and talk about. What are you supposed to do? You have to have a place to turn. Or you just have to completely remove all of these things from your kid's life, which is really hard in the modern day and age. So we launched and started making kids content. I believe Daily Wire is going to follow suit and do the same, because that's what parents need right now. So if you are struggling with this as a parent and you need safe content for your children, go ahead and check out PragerU Kids if you'd like to. And I'm sure you can find something there that is much better than Elmo and Elmo's dad telling you to get vaccinated. Now, moving on, we're going to touch on SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, and things that people are getting very upset about. And it seems like the Supreme Court justice that is taking on most of the heat when it comes to the recent decisions put out by the Supreme Court is Justice Clarence Thomas, you know him as being the second black justice to ever sit on the Supreme Court. He's a current sitting judge, of course, and he does represent the conservative end of the spectrum when it comes to thought here. He's actually probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, conservative Supreme Court justice to really sit there. He marks himself as a constitutionalist and abides by the Constitution, and has come out in the wake of Roe versus Wade and said some things about coming after, what were all of them? Gay marriage was one of them. There were some other landmark decisions that he was looking at. But the gay
marriage... it escapes me the second, sorry.
It's fine. There's plenty of stuff to talk about. So the gay marriage one really, really, perked some ears up, and people were very upset. And, you know, I can understand where people would look at this and go, well, first they came for Roe versus Wade, and that's overturned. Now they're going to come for gay marriage. Now they're going to come for this. Now they're going to come for that. And people can be upset about that, and they can vocalize their opinion on that. Sure. Fine. But the attacks that have been put out against Clarence Thomas are very extreme, and they seemingly have to do with nothing else other than his skin color. Here's one from Rex Chapman, former NBA. He tweeted out this video of Justice Thomas attending a graduation event at Christendom College, where the students are there to be honored. And he was there alongside Antonin Scalia, who was a previous Supreme Court justice, his son, in 2018. Now, here's the video, and I don't know if you recognize anything special about this video. All I see is Clarence Thomas standing amongst students who are graduating. And I guess Rex, since this is all he sees when he looks at videos, noticed skin color, and that was what he had to say. Not another person of color in the picture. Wow, how crazy, how bigoted, that maybe we don't care about diversity of skin color when we're looking at a room. And Justice Thomas is there and is a person of color. Is he invalidated for being the only person of color in the room there? But Rex couldn't leave it at that. He had to go on. He said, such a champion, LOL. I think the thing I think is most funny about this is that these white kids and their parents view this as their entry into Black America. What? What are you even saying? And it just sounds so utterly racist to have such a strong judgment of a man simply because you disagree with his views and he's Black. That is his major qualm here. You can tell in what he's saying. If you scroll down even further, he goes on, Clarence Thomas wouldn't last 20 to 30 seconds in an NBA locker room. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that was a prerequisite to sitting on the Supreme Court, and I don't care. And what does the NBA have to do with Clarence Thomas? Is it maybe because Clarence Thomas is Black that you said that? Maybe. I'm just going to put it out there. Let's move on. He also said, why have you never seen Clarence Thomas at an NBA game, as in ever? Bill Clinton used to come to our games in Landover with the Bullets. Clarence Thomas, never. Maybe. Because Clarence Thomas is a Supreme Court justice who works day in and day out to do his job diligently, and maybe he just doesn't care to go and watch a basketball game. Is there something about him that makes you think he should want to be at an NBA game? That he should want to be in the locker room? That he should want to sit there and watch some guys play basketball? What about Clarence Thomas would make you say such a thing? And I'm sure we will not get an answer on that. Because guess what? The answer would probably be a little racist. But this isn't the only person who's come out against Clarence Thomas, this Rex Chapman. Slews of people have come out calling him a white supremacist, telling him he's still an N-word, even though he doesn't believe it. I mean, hundreds of tweets on this of people who represent, you know, progressive ideology, some liberal, but mainly progressives, saying that Clarence Thomas is an N-word and he's always going to be. It's a very common phrase that people like to throw out and say to people, especially people like me. I've gotten that comment, I want to say 1,000 times, that no matter what I do, I'm still going to be seen as an N-word to all the white folk around me. And it's some of the most racist posturing that we have seen in a long time. What was it, Good Morning America, who put out that tweet?
Yes.
Good Morning America.
Yeah, we should have that
puts
somewhere.
Out a tweet. Yeah, I'm going to look it up on Twitter for you guys. Good Morning America comes out and puts out a tweet about Ketanji Brown Jackson, because she is the first black female to sit on the Supreme Court. But what did they say about her? They said she was the first black Supreme Court justice to sit on the court. Now, this could have been an accident. You know, I'm sure maybe one or two employees is in charge of the Twitter, and that's just simply what one of them thought, and they go and type it, and they tweet it out, and now it's out there. It lasted on Twitter for about 5 hours after being completely decimated by Twitter users who said, you know, what about Thurgood Marshall, and what about Clarence Thomas, who's currently sitting in the Supreme Court? So at the very least, it's a funny little incident. At the most, it just shows how much racism can brew inside progressivism when you have a certain view of the views that black people are meant to represent. And Clarence Thomas falls outside of that box of views, and he's very strong about it.
Yeah, I think it's at most like a Freudian slip from GMA, because it reflects the fact that the people who are behind our mainstream media generally have this view that black people ought to think a certain way. Mm-hmm. And when they don't, they're not a legitimate black person. Right. And that's similar to how TikTok, you get banned from TikTok like every couple of weeks, mm-hmm. despite them launching a creator fund to elevate black voices and stuff. And if you don't toe the line and do what you're expected to, then you're forgotten or marginalized. I mean, the same thing's happened to Tom Sowell. Yeah. And that is, what is that? That is racism. You must think the way that we tend to think. We own you.
Yes, exactly. They feel like they own you. And there is this brilliant video that I'm going to try to actually pull up for you guys and see if I can find it. But it's Justice Sotomayor coming out and talking about Clarence Thomas and just giving what is a really just kind message about who he is as a person and how well he treats everybody who he works with. Here's this video.
With him more than with any other justice. That we have not joined each other's opinions more than anybody else. And yet, Justice Thomas is the one justice in the building that literally knows every employee's name, every one of them. And not only does he know their names, he remembers their family's names. And
got a pause there.
Histories.
There we go.
He's the first one who will go up to someone when you're walking with him and say, is your son okay? How's your daughter doing in college? He's the first one that, when my stepfather died, sent me flowers in Florida. He is a man who cares deeply about the court as an institution, about the people who work there, but about people. He has a different vision than I do.
Oh, it's going to keep pausing.
About how to help people.
Of course, it keeps going.
And about their responsibilities to help themselves, I've often said to people, Justice Thomas believes that every person can pull themselves up by their bootstraps. I believe that some people can't get to their bootstraps without help. They need someone to help them lift their foot up so they can reach those bootstraps. That's a very different philosophy of life. But I think we share a common understanding.
That's enough there. I'll just pause it there. I think this was just a beautiful remark towards Clarence Thomas. And unfortunately, when I was watching this video, I thought, wow, it's kind of brave of her to do that. And it should not be. It should not be a brave thing to stand in front of people who might disagree with what you're saying or disagree with the way you're characterizing somebody and say what you truly think about them. And what does that say about the state we are in as a nation right now? That if somebody disagrees with you politically, you're meant to just push them away, you're meant to exclude them, and you're meant to say that they're a horrible person with no moral value because they disagree with you on a political issue. It's insane. So for her to stand up and go, Whoa. Wait a second. I know we disagreed. You know, I was a dissenting opinion on this particular Roe versus Wade overturn. But Clarence Thomas is a great guy. I mean, he knows everybody's name. He takes care of the people who work for him. He was there for me when I lost a loved one. He is just constantly gracious. He takes his work very seriously. That is an amazing thing to do when you have other people like Hillary Clinton who went on the news and said, in my time working for Clarence Thomas, he was the most angry man. He was full of grievances and we just couldn't get along. He's a horrible person. When you know that's a mischaracterization, clearly from hearing from the people who work directly with him and have a long-standing relationship with him, you can be a person and a good person even when you disagree. And I guess what? I bet they're good friends. I bet they're good brothers and sisters. I bet they're good mothers. I bet they're good grandparents. I bet that if you met them on the street and talked to them, they'd be nice to you and they wouldn't even ask a question about how you feel politically. These people do exist. And to have a video like this, I mean, this video got 1.1 million views because it is now a viral thing to give good remarks to somebody who you disagree with.
Yeah, it's definitely bucks the norm right now, because the norm in our modern generation has become, like you talked about, this highly, highly polarized, highly, if I disagree with you, then there's no possible way that you could actually be a good person. And it's not about our disagreements over different ideas and different approaches that we can discuss intelligently and articulate our thoughts like we tried to do yesterday with people on the street, which you guys will see soon.
Yes.
But it's just about who can win in the naked struggle for power. And it is very encouraging to see that Sotomayor has that perspective. And we've seen it elsewhere. Like when RBG passed away, I think some of the conservative justices spoke highly of her as a friend. Mm-hmm. And when Donald Trump found out, you remember that his reaction went viral because he was just like, oh, wow, you're the first person to tell me that. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yep.
And it was very like human and sincere. He had nothing to gain by performing in that way. So I think there's something to do with like some of these justices come from a different era from a time where it was about the merits of the discussion at hand. And they're practiced in that because they have to be writing opinions on all these things and they have to dissent and use their words to disagree with one another and make arguments. And that's becoming a lost art in our time. And so I think it's telling that they have this relationship with each other. And hopefully that's something we can model rather than going out being outraged and trying to abolish them for doing their jobs properly as they have been doing.
Yes, like they are quite literally just doing their jobs and doing their jobs to the best of their abilities. And Clarence Thomas and Justice Sotomayor, even though they represent different sects of belief, are known for doing that and doing their jobs really, really well. And we're going to constantly have these qualms where we go back and forth with people and we argue. But guess what? At the end of the day, they take their robes off and then they go about their business, or they go out to dinner together, or they go and get drinks, or they hang with each other's families. That's the way that we should be living right now. And for the people who are extremely pro Roe versus Wade and saw it get overturned and were outraged and horrified at this happening, sometimes you don't win in life. And I know that seems like an oversimplification of maybe what just happened and what you just saw, but that is really what it is. There's going to be plenty of issues that are going to pop into the news and we're going to look at it and go, oh my gosh, that goes against everything I believe. And I can't believe that's something happening right now. In fact, we do it every day on this show. We talk about like, I cannot believe this is happening right now. But that is life, you know? We all have our own separate beliefs, our ideologies, our philosophies. And sometimes life does not go that way. And other people will cheer for the things that you cry for. And guess what? At the end of the day, that happened and you go about the next one. And you can keep fighting and standing for what you believe in and hoping that that makes a change and that that influences people. But you don't have to be so upset all the time. You don't have to call everybody evil. You don't have to be mad at Justice Sotomayor for going, yeah, Clarence Thomas is a good guy and I enjoy his company and I think he's great. And I'm guaranteed a lot of people had that reaction and said, how could she? How dare she say such a thing about a man who would want to overturn Roe versus Wade, or maybe next come after gay marriage? But you have to understand that that's just the lens that he does his job through. And I might not even agree with Clarence Thomas on a lot of the things that he writes and a lot of the stronger opinions that he wants to put out moving forward. And even his own fellow justices on the Supreme Court did not agree with his concurrent opinion with this whole Roe v. Wade case. So that happens. We disagree with each other, sometimes on minutia, sometimes on a fundamental level. But we move on and we face our days just the same, because we're still going to be here and we're still going to have to deal with it. And that is why when I think about this Roe v. Wade decision in particular and how it's going down to the states and essentially our states are going to function as different countries with wholly different laws, I'm okay with it. I am okay with it. I am totally fine with the fact that I know California is going to become a beacon state for abortion. And that's where people are going to come in droves to get this procedure. You know what? That's what the people here have decided that that's what they want to do. And they have decided in what is going to be probably a vast majority of people. And I happen to live here in California, and it's going to be something that I'm going to see happen and I'm going to see legislated. But that is what we asked for when we got Roe versus Wade overturned. We asked for it to go to the states, and we asked for people to elect their representatives and those representatives to decide what happens here. So when that happens, and it will, it's just going to be another day. And it might be sad, and it might be something that I don't agree with. But it's just going to be another day, and we can continue to talk about what we believe and say, you know, I'm pro-life or I'm pro-choice, and hope that we influence people. But that'll be all that we'll do. And hopefully that is fine. There's just so much anger and hate all the time, and it's so unnecessary. But there are battles ahead and things that we have to keep talking about and things that we have to keep speaking out against. One in particular, we're going to move on to another story here. Jordan Peterson has been suspended off of Twitter. Why? Because he tweeted out this. Remember when pride was a sin? ? And Ellen Page just had her breast vended by. You will find them everywhere you look. So this, the Twitter terms of service is going to get so long if we don't have Elon Musk come in and do something about this.
Yeah, and they are also, not only is the list long, but they are reading into this the violation that they want to be there. If you just think about it logically for a second, he says Ellen Page had her breast removed. Just chronologically in time, she was Ellen Page at the time she had her breast removed. So it's factually a true statement. So they are reading a dead naming or misgendering or whatever into this tweet because they're probably watching Jordan Peterson's tweets like a hawk and waiting for something to pounce on and justify to get him off of Twitter because he has 5 million followers and he says things that they don't like.
Right. And this is all just vigilantism. You know, let people decide what they're offended by and let them go through the motions and let them see what they want to see. You don't get to be some vigilante who just takes down whatever it is you want to take down. I understand that they're a private company and they get to do so, and we can get into the Section 230 debate about all of this. But I want to talk about whether or not that's the right thing to do, not whether or not that's something they're capable of doing. We all know it's something they're capable of doing. They've been doing it for years now. But it's not right. And it's really, at its heart, such a condescending activity to engage in that you don't trust people to be able to read different opinions, come to their own conclusion about it, and decide whether or not they want to read more. Anybody who has two thumbs and a phone can look at Jordan Peterson's tweet, can read them, and go, you know what? I disagree with that, and maybe I don't want to see his tweets anymore. Block, or say I'm not interested, or maybe just don't follow him. And guess what? For the rest of your livelihood, On Twitter, you will most likely never see another Jordan Peterson tweet again. How crazy is that? How novel an idea that people are able to define their own morality and make that a reality for them when they are on social media. That's totally fine. But instead they go, no, you know, you're not capable of reading other people's thoughts and regulating your own emotions. So we are going to do that for you. We're going to censor it for you. We're going to make a clean slate and pick whatever ideology we want to see be present on the app. And then we're going to force feed you that, which is essentially what they do. You know how much power they have. You know how they can essentially influence an entire election just by what they choose to show people on social media. And to think that they're not utilizing that power and privilege every single day would be a little naive. And that's exactly what they're doing with these major people. The good news is that Jordan Peterson has a massive platform that he can go and say, hey, wait a minute, Twitter just suspended me, and let millions of people know what's going on. You have to think about all the different people who are saying lukewarm things just like this and having their entire existence on social media being erased for it.
Yeah, and it reminds me, too, that it's kind of this insulting coddling that the left does with stuff like race as well. Like, oh, we need to institute affirmative action because black people aren't smart enough on their own merits to get into colleges at the same rates. So we need to boost them up and call into question whether they're doing it on their own merits. And then by the same token, they're saying trans people aren't emotionally resilient enough to deal with people who don't have the same views on gender and sexuality as them. So we need to censor all of society and ban anyone who might trigger their emotional fragility rather than give them the opportunity to to assert themselves and overcome that and be emotionally resilient people, just like everyone else has to be in society. They're not capable. It's the same reason like Dave Chappelle gets in underwater for making a trans joke by Netflix, and there's all calls to ban him because you cannot even joke about them. Because, yeah. But what that does is like if you have a group of friends and one friend is so too sensitive to even joke about, it's like they're not really in the in group if everyone has to put on a front. You know, and by they're actually doing the exact opposite of helping people integrate into society, yes. by making these special exceptions and by censoring people and saying you can't say this, you can't use these words in regards to this person, trying to police everyone's language. It ends up doing the exact opposite of what they're trying to accomplish.
Right. Yeah. Why don't we just pad all of our rooms and put pillows on our hands so we don't scratch ourselves? It's exactly what we're doing, but with thoughts right now. It's so clear. And you know, I was at a conference a couple weekends ago in Denver, Colorado, and somebody got up and asked this guy who's very pro-capitalism. I believe his name is Eric Daniels. He's done a book club with us about Atlas Shrugged, and he's talking about capitalism. And somebody gets up and says, you know, I have a lot of people who, when I talk about capitalism, come to me and say, people should be given basic human necessities, or what they deem to be basic human necessities, their food, their water, their shelter, you know, medicine and healthcare if they need it. And that should just be the baseline for being born as a human in America. And he said, what's your response to this? And he immediately retorted back, I mean, without a second of thought, saying, do we want to coddle human beings like that? We know that obtaining things like food and water and shelter and healthcare can be difficult, and we understand that. And there should certainly be safety nets and safeguards for the people who truly are incapable of getting that for themselves. But do we need to make that the baseline for every human that is now born in this country? Is that not coddling? And the same can be said for policing people's thoughts, policing what people say, and policing what people hear and read. You are coddling our minds into an existence that is not real. Your life is never going to be free of offense. Your life is never going to be free of hatred. Your life is never going to be free of suffering. In fact, I think the people who suffer the most are the ones who are the most privileged and the most cushioned, because they don't know what real life is. They don't know what true human fortitude is. They don't know the extent of their own mental fortitude because they have been coddled so much by this current culture. You need to go through that. You need to suffer a little bit. I wouldn't even say being offended or experiencing hate is truly suffering, because I do think it's forming. I do think it molds your mind. I do think it molds your philosophy. It molds your brain and how you act and who you are as a person. So in a lot of ways, the people who lack that sort of offense, that sort of hatred, that sort of obstacle are the ones who are really suffering, because they're leading this coddled life that is not reality. It will never be real. So we can't move on and can't move forward like this. And I know Elon Musk is in the throes of buying the social media app, and this is not a problem simply for Twitter. It's a problem for all of these different landscapes that we access media and entertainment and other thoughts through. But we have to do something about this, and hopefully he's the one to do it. It sucks to me that it takes $44 billion from somebody who values free speech to make this happen. And that it's not just part of the cultural zeitgeist that we all accept that we should be able to have free speech in this country. But if that's what we need to do, then Elon, please get on it. Like, get on it now. I can't deal with this anymore. Somebody as big as Jordan Peterson, with this amount of power and influence, can with the drop of a hat be taken off of a platform like this and have their audience snatched away from them. Similarly, we saw this with Donald Trump, who because of some mean tweets was being taken off of Twitter, and because of his influence and somehow inciting violence. Nobody can make you do something you don't want to do, really. I mean, unless under extreme coercion, or somebody's, you know, lighting a fire under your feet, somebody cannot make you do something that you do not want to do. And words are powerful in a sense. You know, words are important. It's important to choose your words wisely and truly get your message out in a way that you're not being misunderstood. But words should not be policed like this. They're not important in the sense that if you call somebody something rude, they should crumble and fall to the ground in a pile of tears. You know, words are words. That is all they are. And while they can exercise a great amount of importance, not this amount of importance, to be censored off a platform for hateful conduct. We really need to move on from whatever period we are in as a society right now that we are so sensitive to language. And I hope to see that soon. But if you foster an entire generation with this sort of idea, guess what's going to happen? It's going to happen tenfold in another 10 to 20 years when they grow up. I can't imagine what it's going to look like. Like, what is going to be offensive in 10 years?
I have no idea, but I'm reminded of that old saying, you don't childproof the world, you worldproof the child.
Yep.
And as you're talking, I'm thinking, like, this is the same logic as saying, like, you know, we should put wild baby animals in zoos and provide for all their needs and protect them from the big dangerous world, because they might face predators out there, and we just need to never let animals grow up in the wild and be exposed to the elements and have to fend for themselves. Because mm-hmm. And no, an animal cannot become a mature, like a baby tiger can't become a mature, healthy tiger that's living as it's supposed to live unless it's out there and exposed to the elements and has to learn how to fend for itself, and it's got help from its mother or whatever. But
right.
You know, see, but the humans,
similarly,
you cannot be a fully functioning adult human if the only way for you to exist is by being coddled. And society cannot, you know, put everybody into a zoo and, like, give you the basic necessities and protect you from words that you might find offensive and stuff. It's not a sustainable way. You have to build strong individuals, strong people who can make their way in the world and assert themselves. Otherwise, what are you even going to get? And if you keep people in that prison of ideology,
mm-hmm.
and you say, here's how you should think, and here we'll provide all your basic. That's basically communism. Is they don't want you to be an individual and who has something unique and your own thoughts and your own talents and your own character
right.
to bring to the world, and you bring that to bear by developing yourself and growing and innovating and launching a business or doing something. They just want you to do your little part, go in your little, you know, don't think for yourself, be the cog in the machine. We'll provide for your basic needs, and that's it. And this type of thinking is what lands you in that type of world, and that's not one that I want to live in. And
right.
with freedom comes a little bit of risk, but with that you have flourishing, and humans cannot flourish when we treat each other like we are zoo animals.
Right. You know, that's actually the perfect analogy for that, because I remember as a kid being like, oh my gosh, the zoo is so exciting. I love to go see all the animals and well, it's so cool that we got them all together and they're all held in their little cages and all this stuff. And then you learn about the true suffering that happens when an animal is kept in captivity, and how their life is so much more meaningless and just more harmful to them when they live that way. And that's exactly what we are doing with the human mind right now, to a T, what we are doing. And as soon as people recognize how bad it is to hold your own mind in captivity, you should be just as angry as you are about the zoo animals. Just as angry about it, if not more, because mm-hmm. it is directly affecting you, your children, your peers, your friends, your family, everybody around you. And it's just not, I like to think that it's not sustainable, and that we can't go forward like this, and that naturally it will just all crumble. But I do think it takes a certain group and a large group of people to go, no, I'm not going to do this, for this to not fully just take hold of our society. I'll tell a quick story, because yesterday we did not stream, and you guys missed us yesterday because we were outside of UCLA filming a video asking people on the street, is America racist? And actually trying to encourage civil discourse, back and forth, debate, get people's ideas. And some people I interviewed and they gave me their ideas and they were completely contrary to mine. And I just said, okay, that's interesting. You know, I'm glad I know your perspective now. I pushed them on maybe a few things, but wasn't really getting in the vein of trying to change anybody's mind or foster a massive debate. Just wanted to give them a few facts, see if it changed the way they viewed things, and move on from there and let them go about their day, which is what most of us should be doing with our conversations anyway. But we had a slew of really, really great conversations. A few people who even went, you know, I didn't ever think about it like that. I'm going to have to, you know, do some research, and I'm going to have to get back to you, or I'm going to have to maybe change the way that I think. But we got this one guy towards the end. We were about to finish filming and just head back home. And this guy is waiting in line because Taylor was screening the people who wanted to be interviewed. And he's like, I want to go and have this discussion. Great. Seemed like a really nice guy. Even mentioned how we should foster civil discourse in this country. Okay. Before he comes and gets interviewed, he comes up to me and I ask him the question, do you think America's racist? He said, yes, absolutely. And we start going back and forth about it and talking about where America's racist. I asked him the question if maybe we should focus more on class than we do on race, and that would help to raise people up out of poverty, raise up the underprivileged who can be both white and black. And he said, you know, race and class are indistinguishable at this point. They must all be coupled together. And we kept going through the conversation, and slowly, slowly, as I started to push and challenge and give stats, he got more and more defensive and his answers got shorter. At one point, he would not even give me eye contact when I was asking the questions and just was completely shut off. And we started talking about affirmative action. And I said, you know, if you and I applied to UCLA, which is right here in the background, a couple streets down, And we have the same resume. I'm going to get in and you're probably not. He goes, you have nothing to substantiate that. And I said, well, they claim to be a university that promotes affirmative action, which would mean they value diversity of skin color more than they value other things. Well, you don't know that in that specific case. If we both applied, that you would get in and I wouldn't. And I said, okay. We went back and forth on that for like 2 minutes of him saying, you couldn't possibly know that. I said, okay, let's just assume that's the policy that they've set forth and that if we put in the same resumes, I was going to get in and you wouldn't. Is that discrimination? He said, no, that's not discrimination. I said, how so? He's like, well, they're taking in other factors. That's not discrimination. And I said, if you purely are looking at somebody's race with the same exact resume or application and you pick somebody because they're black and you don't pick somebody else because they're white, that's discrimination. And he said, no, it's not. And he got caught in this moment where he could have just been honest and go, you know what? I do see that as a form of discrimination. I totally understand, but I think it's necessary. There's plenty of people who believe that. Affirmative action is discrimination, but it is a discrimination that is necessary for the time that we're in as a country. But he couldn't even admit that. So he keeps going, and all of a sudden in the interview, he goes, am I going to get royalties for this video that you're taking of me right now? And I said, huh? What are you talking about? You want royalties for this video? He's like, yeah, am I going to get some sort of compensation because you're using my content right now? And he had agreed to do the interview with Taylor. We went through this whole process. We got him on the camera and I said, well, no. And we don't have to monetize the video if that's what you're concerned about. We won't monetize it. We'll put it out. And guess what? Nobody will be getting money off the YouTube video. And he said, oh, that's really interesting that you work for somebody who, you know, wouldn't want to get money. He's like, I know you get all that conservative grift money, basically. And he starts just with these ad hominem attacks. He even says some stuff that I can't even say on camera. He starts saying that, why would you work for PragerU? You guys are garbage human beings. And Scott eventually intervened and he goes, whoa, dude, you just sat and you just talked to us for about 5+ minutes and you had a normal conversation. Are we garbage human beings? And he said, well, if you work for PragerU, then you are garbage human beings. And he called Dennis Prager a very, very nasty word that I will not repeat on this show, and just was attacking after attacking after attacking. And it's purely because I think maybe this guy has not been challenged a day in his life on his views. Maybe he does not even know how to handle the emotional maturity that is needed to have a conversation with somebody that you disagree with. And it went from a totally respectful person that once you got challenged or once you got offended about something, blew a gasket over it. And if that's the person that we are creating day in and day out with the type of culture that we have right now, we are in for a lot of trouble. We're in for a lot of butting heads, and we're in for no compromise and no solution, because there cannot be a solution met when all you do is attack people who have made you feel uncomfortable. And I just have to think that maybe this guy has not experienced an ounce of that in his life, and he suddenly experienced it and then did not know how to deal with it. And that's exactly what people who work behind their computer screens and censor people on Twitter are like. They can't stand the idea of anybody thinking something dissident to what they believe.
Yeah, and that's a heavy contrast to what we talked about before with Justice Sotomayor and how she spoke about Clarence Thomas. Again, these people are practiced in using their words and using their thoughts and formulating thoughts and focusing on the substance and the merits of the arguments that we're making and disagreeing on, rather than acting like a petulant child whenever, oh, you started defeating my argument, so now I'm going to start resorting to ad hominem and calling you names. Mm-hmm. Because it's a very like childish way of dealing with a disagreement. And it's true that our culture is fostering that. And social media has a role in that. You know, the mainstream media and people who are in control of a lot of these platforms are driving that. But at the end of the day, kind of like you said, no one's holding a gun to your head to be mm-hmm. a terrible person. Yeah. So take some responsibility for yourself and learn to engage and use your words and formulate thoughts and make arguments and express yourself. Use free speech to make your way in the world and to add your contribution to the world and into society. Because if you don't do that, what's the alternative? Then either you're pulling back into your own echo chamber and not really helping anything, or we're just going to end up stuck in this struggle for power, because if I can't prove you wrong, all I can do is beat you into submission.
Yep. And I wonder to myself, do people go home and feel good about themselves when they do things like that? I think back in the day, I certainly had this air of, oh, I did something right, or I stood up to that person, that fascist or whatever, when I would speak to somebody, and never in that manner. I was never that extreme, but there would certainly be times where I thought that and did not say it. And you know, at the end of the day, you're harming yourself more than you're harming anybody else. And right now, we have a problem with people who don't want to say, I don't know, and don't want to say I was wrong. And I was certainly in that camp of people quite a while ago. And I've had to learn and even still have to come face to face with conflicts sometimes where I don't want to say I don't know and I don't want to say I was wrong. And I have to look inside myself and go, whoa, what did I get so defensive about? These are just ideas. Why am I so beholden to a certain set of ideas? And why in that moment did I put up a blinder where I couldn't admit where I truly was? And that was in the camp of I don't know or I was wrong. And we all run into these moments. We all get defensive. We all feel the heat in our faces when something is not going our way and we internally know that we're wrong but are not ready to say it externally. And at that moment, just take a breath and go, you know what? I was wrong. This is a learning moment for me. And I'm now a better human being because I admitted that and I came to terms with it. And thank you for taking the time to explain that to me or to go back and forth with me on that issue. What a wonderful thing. And yeah, I can't wait for you guys to see that video because that guy's conversation was certainly not the tone setter for the entire day. We had plenty of people who had really great things to say. I even learned things from a lot of the people who came and quite a few foreign individuals who talked about racism in America versus racism in other countries. So there's a lot to see there and I can't wait for you guys to see it. Last thing I wanted to touch on here, because this is just a funny tweet that we came across. Here is the Toronto police tweeting out a news release for a missing woman. Missing woman, Ryerson Avenue in Bathurst Street area. Look at the picture. Now, for somebody to be missing, devastating thing, travesty. I hope this individual is found. I'm questioning the woman part. Just me. Could be wrong. I know we're in a little bit of a topsy-turvy society today, but this doesn't quite look like a missing woman.
Hate speech.
Beats me, though.
Hate speech.
Hate speech.
You could get banned for saying that's not a woman.
You get banned for saying
that's the world we live in.
Yes. Today. If I quote tweeted this and said this is not a woman, I run the risk of being banned off of Twitter.
So there we are.
So there...
Got some work to do, America.
We've got some work to do. We have some conversations to have. We've got some times to admit we don't know and we were wrong. But mostly, I'm thinking I'm right about this one. Maybe this is one where I'm not willing to admit that I'm wrong.
Gotta put the stake in the ground somewhere.
Yeah, you gotta draw the line in the sand, the stake in the ground. You gotta assert yourself somewhere. And I think this is where I'm choosing to assert myself and say, missing woman? Question mark? Because I don't see it. Anyways, guys, what a funny note to close out the show on. I hope this missing woman is found. That's all I will say, because I imagine that's a pretty terrifying situation. I'm just questioning the word choice from the Toronto police on this one. Guys! Enjoy your three-day weekend. Hopefully it's a three-day weekend for you, and you might not be working on Monday. If you are working on Monday, I don't know. I feel bad for you. Take some time to celebrate America while you're at it. Maybe say the pledge in the morning or something like that. Thank you guys so much for watching. I will be back on Tuesday with a video for you, but we are going to put out some content over the weekend, so do not fret. You have plenty of ridiculous things to look at and plenty of commentary to keep you guys, to keep you stable. Hopefully you're stable without me, but if you're not, contact a doctor of some sorts. Thank you for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. That's 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and I will see you guys on Tuesday. Have a fantastic July 4th Independence Day. Let's celebrate that independence. Bye, guys.
Happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day.